For many years now, we have kept a bird feeder in our backyard, where we can almost reach out and touch the birds from our deck chairs. The cylinder-shaped bird feeder was purchased with the promise that it was squirrel-proof. However, unlike the songbirds who regularly feed there, the enterprising squirrels have figured out how to make it into a feeding trough. We enjoy feeding and seeing our outdoor pets, and most often we feel good about feeding them. However, from time to time, for one reason or another, vacation, bad weather, forgetfulness, we neglect to fill our feeder. During times like that, the birds still come to the feeder to feed, and finding no food, they fly away. I have wondered if the birds would ever abandon our backyard feeder out of frustration and disappointment. Or do they wonder if they've done something wrong and feel responsible for the feed being withheld from them? In reality, they probably come because they found food there before. And if they don't happen to find it there, they simply fly away and find it somewhere else. That is one of the major differences between us humans and other creatures. We humans are meaning makers, constantly trying to understand and figure out our world in terms of cause and effect. We desperately want to believe that the world makes sense, that it's a place where things just don't happen, but happen for a reason. As difficult as it might be to accept, we want to be told that it was not by accident that a family member was diagnosed with cancer. A child was born with a disability, or a city was destroyed by a hurricane or lava from a volcano. We are comfortable with the thought of living in a randomly unregulated world. But maybe even more than wanting to be reassured that our world and its natural laws are orderly and predictable, we want very much to believe that it is fair, that people get what they deserve. Job's visitors in the biblical world to which we will shortly be introduced struggle mightily not only to find cause for their friend's suffering, but also to assure themselves that Job's sufferings are morally justified. They would not be consoled to realize that an all-powerful God inflicted it because God does not care about the moral worth of his victims. Perhaps no area of life raises more questions than the misfortunes that befall us. A theologian once wrote a book-length study of what makes humans unique. He found that the crucial difference was not in larger brain size, upright posture, operable thumbs, or even language. What makes humans unique, he suggested, is our ability to find meaning in suffering. Unlike the birds in our backyard, who, when they find the bird feeder empty, fly off and look for food elsewhere, the man or woman who loses a job, is injured in a car crash, or is diagnosed with a malignant tumor, feels compelled to ask, "Why did this happen to me?" And if no answer is readily available, they will keep looking until they find at least an adequate one. Suffering becomes more bearable when we can give it meaning or purpose. What good can come out of this, we ask. Is there a place believers can turn where we can understand that this world and our lives in it make some sense, in which everything happens for a reason, not just natural reasons, but also moral ones? How about one that speaks of moral causes for the things that happen to us are inevitable? Not only to invoke a creator God, but also a caring God who is an active presence in our world and in our lives. In the Bible, there is one book that engages serious theological consideration about a world where people suffer for no apparent reason. That book, of course, is Job. The book of Job does not identify its author or indicate even the date when it was written. The story takes place outside of Israel, most likely in the neighboring country of Edom. The date when it's written has always been debated among scholars. The Jewish Babylonian Talmud attributes this book to the hand of Moses. The early church father Eusebius asserted that it was written around the time of the patriarch Abraham, while most experts today place it in the time of the patriarchs Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The theme that dominates the entire book of Job is suffering, which is a common subject discussed by humans in every age. In the Hebrew Bible, the book of Job is located in the third major section, known as the Ketuvim, or the miscellaneous writings, which comes after the Torah and the books of the prophets. The Ketuvim contains the major books of the Psalms, Proverbs, and Job, and the five minor scrolls, or Megillah, and several historical books. 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, for example. The three major books are referred to as the books of truth. The spiritual truths of the Psalms, the practical truths of the Proverbs, and the theological truths of Job. The first thing we need to know about the book of Job is that, actually, there are two of them. First, there is the fable of Job, a very old, simple folktale of faith, maintained and rewarded in chapters 1, 2, and 42 of the biblical book. Then there's the poem of Job, a much later and more complicated work comprising the larger middle section of the book from chapters 3 on to 41. The poem of Job reveals a Job who is not a steadfast believer, but who questions God's compassion and mercy. In the fable, Job is never tempted to cry out or express anger toward God. He tells his wife, "Should we accept not only the good from God and not accept evil?" Whereas the first thing that Job does in the poem is to curse the unfairness of his fate. Once upon a time, the fable begins, there was a man named Job, which means in Hebrew, one who is treated as an enemy. Job is a man who feared God and is described as blameless and upright. He has been blessed by God with abundant wealth in terms of domestic animals, as well as a large family containing 7 sons and 3 daughters. When you look at it, his world is complete. He lacks absolutely nothing. Not only did Job sin himself, but when he learned that his sons had been parting hardy, he would offer sacrifices on their behalf to cover up their sins and punishment. Eventually, Job is a pious, God-fearing everyone. Was Job a real person? Did all these terrible things really happen to him? We are told that Job lived in the land of Uz. That's what Uz is pronounced, Uz, which is the name also of Nahor's oldest son. The fable tells us that one day Satan appeared before God to report on the things of God's earthly subjects. Here in the book of Job, Satan is not the character we meet in the New Testament. It's both a noun and a verb. Satan means to dare, to challenge, to accuse. And of course, he's also known as the one who is the accuser and the challenger. So God says to Satan, he appears to God to report on the things, and God says to him, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on earth. He's a blameless and upright man who fears God and will turn away from all evil." But Satan, the challenger, replies, "Well, of course he does good. You've made it worth his while, rewarding him richly for his piety and uprightness." God insists that Job would be just as faithful if all those blessings were taken away from him. So God and Satan enter a wager to test whether or not this is indeed the case. Satan sends a marauding army to kill Job's servants and to steal his livestock. He sends a tornado to destroy the house which Job's 10 children are celebrating, killing them all. In all this, we are told, Job did not sin or charge God with wrongdoing. God now turns to Satan and says, "Have you noticed that Job has not been shaken in his faith, despite what you have persuaded me to do to him? Doesn't that prove that he is a person of great integrity?" Satan counters, "It doesn't prove a thing. You've only taken property from him, which can be easily returned or replaced. Touch him personally and see how quickly he will turn against you." So God afflicts Job with a disease over all his body, causing him constant pain and aggravation. His wife now urges him to curse God and be struck dead for it, or to be put out of his misery once and for all. But Job rebukes her. Three friends will come to console him in his bereavement and pity his condition. Before they can say anything, the tone of the narrative, the poem, changes. And Job's quiet acceptance of God's punishment changes to roaring rage against it. So, what wisdom can we glean from what we've heard and read so far? The adversities we humans experience can come from many sources. Some result from our own mistakes and choices. Others are beyond our personal control, such as many health and medical problems, financial difficulties caused by macroeconomics, and accidents like being struck by a car. The book of Job suggests that the adversities are rooted in cosmic issues that extend far beyond one's individual responsibility. So, beloved people of God, Job's initial response to personal calamity and tragedy reflects deep pain, but also an unshakable faith in God. Faith in God means that we face our pain not with stoic or unfeeling response. When adversity strikes our lives, we can and should feel the full extent of the pain. Faith does not deny pain, but rather takes it to the Lord. For as Job will come to learn, that adversity can lead us into a greater spiritual depth in our knowledge, confidence, and relationship with God. We will also discover another Job who will face excruciating pain and even death and maintain his faith in God's will for his life. And that person we know is Jesus the Christ. Amen.